Thank you very much. Thank you everyone for coming. Thank your wives for letting you out on Mother's Day. And I'm sure they'll be well celebrated during the rest of the day. There's a question that's often asked about Sfira. And the question begins in the very, very end of the Ran's commentary to the Rif in Pesachim. And there he quotes the Baal HaMor. And the Baal HaMor, Rav Yochai Halevi, raised the question, why all through Sfira have we not been counting double? Because in Chutzlarts we always have Sveika de Yoma, we always have 2 days for every one day. We have 2 days of Shavuos, we had two Sdarim, we had 2 days of Yom Kippur and Shul Pesach. So therefore, since we always have a Sofek, as to, or we keep the Minog as if we had a Sofek, so why don't we do the same thing for Sfira? Why don't we count, today is 45, today is 46, like a Baruch count. So when the Rav discussed this question, it's recorded in Rav Schechter's volume, not the Nefesh Rav, but the next Sefer, I think Divrei Rav. So the Rav thought that the question was not a very strong question. The Baal HaMor's answer to the question is that we don't do Sveika de Yoma because now we're keeping Sfira as a mitzvah de Rabbanan. Now we keep Sfira as a Zefer for Mikdash. We keep Sfira to remind us, and that will be well poised the next year when we have the Korban Omer, and we'll be counting the Korban Omer between the Rice and Mikdash. So we have to make sure that we keep the mitzvah going. Or Zeichel and Mikdash. Everyone understands Zeichel and Mikdash. So since it's Zeichel and Mikdash, Chazal never imposed upon us to keep it with the full chumras of the din to keep the sake of the Yoma. The Rav thought that the question was not a very powerful question to begin with. Because the Rav thought that the halacha of Sfeik of the Yoma only applies to Yom Tiftik halachos. Right? We make Kiddush twice because of Sfeik of the Yoma. We dab in the Nusach of Yom Tiftik davening twice because of Sfeik of the Yoma. We keep the second day Yom Tiftik, Sfeik of the Yoma. But Sfiras HaOmer is not a Yom Tiftik day. Sfiras HaOmer begins the day after Yom Tov, and we count the days between the day after Yom Tov and then Shavuos. So since it's not a Yom Tov Tikdin, it doesn't come from the halachos of the Kedushas Hayom. It's really not born with the Sofek of Sveik of the Yom of Yom Tov. Nevertheless, even though the Rav was dismissive of the question as it's developed through some of the more recent Achronim points to an interesting issue in the midst of counting per se. And when this question was analyzed first by Reb Shimon Shkop and then by the Dvar Avram, Reb Avram Shapira of Kovna, both Talmidim of Reb Chaim. Reb Shimon was a very early Talmud of Reb Chaim, and the Dvar Avram was a later Talmud of Reb Chaim. Reb Avram Shapiro was the Talmud of Reb Chaim, who stuck with the method, and till his later years he was a brisker, and Reb Shimon was an early Talmud of Reb Chaim who at some point veered off and developed a different approach, not vastly different, but different with significance from Reb Chaim. And Reb Shimon begins his analysis by going to a Sugya in Bava Metzia, as we've been learning this year, as Sugya at the very end of the one of the most enchanting and difficult Sugyas of the first parak Tokfu Kohen. And there the Gemara raises the question of what happens if I have a Sofek Bechor. The very end of Sefer Vayikra tells us the din that when a person has a flock of sheep and he has to give Maser, so he doesn't just go into his sheep, the corral, and figure out how many sheep he has. He has to actually go sheep by sheep and bring them in tachas amata. He has to bring them from the corral to another corral, count them as they go, and then every 10th sheep gets taken out and becomes maser behema, as opposed to simply asking your shepherd, how many are there? and then finally there are 100, all right, bring 10 in to be taken as Maser Behema. So the question is then posed by there's a Brisa that says, well, what happens if one little sheep jumps back? So you're counting 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And then one of the ones that was counted jumps back into the uncounted ones. What's the halacha then? So the Brisa says, then you're done. You're fried. You're finished. There's nothing you can do anymore. There's no halacha. You're potter from giving ma'aser. Right? That's the Gemara. The Gemara says, why should you be potter from giving ma'aser? You have a suffix. In other words, I counted 1, 2, 3, 4. So now, after I counted number 5, one of them jumps back. I don't know which one it is. Right? I can't recognize which sheep jumped back. So now I have in my 25 remaining sheep, there's one counted. Why should I go further? I still can give 2 more behemoths for maser. So why don't I keep on going? Why don't I say, after number 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, keep on going. Now, what do I have to lose? If number 7 was already counted, all right, so this group of 9, I think it's 10, it's really 9, we're not chayim and maser, because only 9. One was counted already. All right. So I end up giving an animal unnecessarily, so to speak. If, on the other hand, 7, 8, 9, 10 were not yet counted, then it's a perfect ma'aser. It's halacha din de'oraisa. So we have a suffix de'oraisa. So I should keep on counting rather than giving things up. Why did Gemara say, no, suffix mechoreis, kof tze'echad min adir, one jumps out, I'm finished, I can no longer keep the mitzvah of ma'aser behema. The Gemara itself asked the question. The Gemara itself, I should keep on going. The Gemara has a more powerful question. The Gemara says, I could really still be Mekayim the mitzvah of Ma'aser Behema. Why is that? Because there's a halacha that as I'm counting from 1 to 10, if I'm counting and I'm able to give Ma'aser, and something happens that I couldn't give Ma'aser, I'm still Mekayim the mitzvah. As I'm counting through 10, and as they go into the next, corral, one of them dies. All right? But as I was counting, they were kosher. So the Gemara says, either way, I should be able to keep on giving ma'aser behema, at the very, very least, sofik der ma'aser l'chumra. So the Gemara says, you know why I can't do it anymore? Because we have a din. Sofik asiri lav asiri. If you're not sure if it's number 10, it's not number 10. Sofik asiri. If I have a doubt as to whether it's number 10, lavas, it's not number 10. It's not even a keem of a sofik. I'm not even mekayim the mitzvah they rise to me tam sofik. Sofik asiri. If I have a question about number 10, it is vaday not number 10. So I just can't keep on counting. Because from now on, I'm not sure whether the next week that's coming through was already counted or not counted. So halach is, there's no mitzvah anymore. So Shimon Shkop says, where is this coming from? The Torah says you have to count. The Torah does not specify that Ma'aser Behema is a different kind of din. Why don't we apply the regular rule of Sofik De'oraisa? I have a question of the din De'oraisa. L'chumra. Where did this din come from? Of Sofik Asiri. That's what we have in front of you, the Shari Yosher. Reb Shimon Shkop. It's a magnificent 2-volume sefer. Reb Shimon Shkop was a magnificent personality himself. Reb Shimon Shkop said Shiurim in our yeshiva, because he came to America to fundraise. And in those years, you didn't come for 2 weeks and get a tuudah and go back. But when you came to fundraise, you were in America for a year, for 2 years, in order to make the trip worthwhile. And that is one of the greatest lessons that you can learn from Shimon Shkop. You can learn a tremendous amount from Shimon Shkop. One of the greatest lessons that you end up in America fundraising. Why is that? Because Shimon Shkop became the Rosh Yeshiva of Grodno in 1919. And in 1919, what had happened was that there was this town, Grodno, and somehow, in the ravages of the First World War, around 1916, this town of Grodno was really not a very well-known town, with a very, very small group of guys learning, but Hashgacha had it that it became a safe haven for yeshiva guys running away during the First World War. And it so happened that even after the Germans ran over this area of, I think it was an area of Poland, Grodno flipped backwards and forwards, but I think even after the Germans took it over, for some reason the yeshiva was able, they were able to learn there. And people heard about this, so people came, other boys who were running from other yeshivas came to Grodno, and with the close of the First World War, there was a substantial group in Grodno, and it was one of the areas that was least touched, one of the yeshivas that was least touched by the war. And they figured that this would be a place in which they could rebuild some of the yeshivas. That's what happened in Grodno, but they didn't have anybody to with whom to rebuild it. During the First World War, they had some major personalities. The son-in-law of the Alter from Novodik, who happened to run to Grodno. He went back to his yeshiva after the war, and there was, I believe, the Menal of Radin came, but he also went back to Radin, so they were left without a Rosh Hashiva. And they still attracted boys. They had a tremendous regiment. In Grodno, you had to learn 11 blood a week. You had to learn 5 blood per Ion and 6 blood per Kiyos, and they were tested every single week on the... So it was a very strong group, and they needed a Rosh Hashiva. So they turned to Rav Kahneman of Ponovich, and he said, you need Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon had made a reputation for himself because he was known as the Talmud Rav Chaim, and then he went on to be a Rosh Hashiva in Telz. Rav Hashiva in Telz for more than a decade, and then he left Telz and became a Rav in a small town, then became a Rav in a town called Bransk. So this is, but he had a reputation as being a great, great Talmud Chacham, and also a magnetic personality. So they came to Bransk, and he said, no, the people in Bransk need him, he's not leaving. So they went to Rav Chaim Moiser. Rav Chaim Moiser said, Rav Shimon, you have to go. Rav Shimon did not want to go. Rav Chaim Moiser insisted. He said, you have to go because we need a Rav Shiva who will rebuild the yeshivas, and you're the man. So Rav Shimon turned to Bransk, and he said that he's not leaving for any unhappiness, and he's not leaving for his own covet, but the Gadol HaDor said, to go. That's the Shimon's also not on the way. So the Gadol HaDor said he has to go. So he went to and he made one deal. That's what I was referring to before. He made one deal with Rav Chaim Moiser, and that is he shouldn't have to fundraise for the yeshiva. That was the one deal he made. He should be able to. Rav Chaim Moiser wrote, he says that Shimon shouldn't have to fundraise. Rav Chaim Moiser said he himself will take responsibility if the yeshiva ever needs money. And that way Rav Shimon can spend every waking hour with the Talmidim and learning. So that's the important lesson, that whenever you make a deal, whenever to fundraise, it is not worth not worth that much. That's what Rav Shimon ended up in America for 2 years, teaching in our yeshiva, to our great credit and to our great mazel, because Grodno went through a difficult time. What happened is that after the Russian Revolution, so the Russians came in and they devastated Grodno, and then when they left, they gave it back to Poland. So when they left Grodno, he had to rebuild the whole yeshiva. Rav Shimon is also fascinating. Rav Shimon was in his 60s when he left Bransk to be the Rosh Hashiva of Grodno. So he built the yeshiva in the 60s, and I believe Shari Yosh was written in the 70s, I believe. And Rav Shimon then had to rebuild the yeshiva in 1919, and was very successful in doing so. But that's when they fell into very severe financial troubles, and he had to travel. Rav Shimon also, just tell you one other thing about Rav Shimon, just get a picture. Rav Shimon was a very, very devoted Rebbe, and a very loving Rebbe, and a tremendous, tremendously dedicated person to the study of Torah. They used to say about Rav Shimon that in the winters in Grodno, he was not a person of means, so he didn't have good shoes. But he would still have to go to the Beis HaMedrash. So he used to wrap his feet in cloth in order to go from his house to the Beis HaMedrash. And they said there used to be a trail of blood from the cracked skin of his feet from the house to the Beis HaMedrash. But he was also a person of a magnificent charm. And I forget who it was. One of the Talmud once came to Grodno and to get a bechina of Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon was a very tall and imposing figure. And Rav Shimon would not give him a bechina until he woke, brought him into his home. He said, you've been traveling for 2 days. He'll rest. He slept. He gave him his bed to sleep in. He slept in a Shimon's bed, or a guest bed, I don't know. And only after he rested and had breakfast, then Rav Shimon gave him a bechina for Grodno. So Rav Shimon says over here, that where does this idea come from? Asiri vade velo asiri sofek. Where does this din come from? So the Rav Shimon says that nira de eino besuk sofek lekula. He doesn't think that we have every so often halachas of sofek lekula. We have halacha of sofek Safek the Raisa Lakula say Orla. Orla and Chutzlart Safek Lakula. Every so often, Safek Tuma Vershus Harabim Lakula. Every so often, you have a din, Safek the Raisa Lakula. So maybe, Reb Shimon says, maybe there's some halachal emotion we see now that we're not so fully aware of, that the Gemara is revealing to us. Safek Masa Lakula. He doesn't think that's the reason. He thinks it's the same thing as every Safek de Raisa. If that's the case, so why is it that we should say Safek Masa Lakula? So if you skip down to the bottom of the first paragraph, where it says Al Kein Al Korcha Yesh Lomar, Reb Shimon gives us a principle. The Kpida Torah, the Torah was concerned Sheyiyya Haminyan Borer Lamona, that account has to be clear to the counter. The Mesupuku Al Echod Mehaminuyim. And if the counter has a doubt as to whether this has been counted, there's no count anymore. The mispar, and this is by vintage of Shimon. The main distinction between Reb Shimon of Telz and Reb Chaim of Brisk is that Reb Chaim's svaras always had to come from a text. It had to come from a nusach, from a lashon, from a rishon. Reb Shimon's approach was that you can have a svara that makes a lot of sense, even if it comes from without. I can't, even though he could not peg it down to a certain text. So this is vintage Reb Shimon. However, this particular svara did find its way to Reb Avram Shapir, which is the Talmud of Reb Chaim, because it's one of the svaras that brings the two schools together. So he says that yesh latim, we can explain this. The mispor she'enoi borer loy choshuv mispor. An unclear number is not a number. Uminyan, it's not counting. The kanirish is eutamoy shalatah. Then he explains how you can explain some other halachas. We'll come to that in a moment, right? In other words, a mathematician will support us, right? If there's a halacha that something has to be calibrated, so saying it's almost 2 cc's doesn't count, right? You're doing an experiment, right? And it calls for having 2 cc's of something. So 2.2 is not 2. In many areas of life, so having a measure of doubt is entirely acceptable. But when the Torah says to count something, that by its very definition means precision. When the Torah says, give me a certain number, by definition, counting requires precision. Otherwise, the Torah would say to calibrate something, by definition, calibration requires precision. So Reb Shimon is saying that what he thinks the Torah is saying over here is, what the Gemara is saying, Asiri Sofek, a doubtful 10 is not 10. That what that means is, I can't be mekayem the mitzvah with any measure of uncertainty. Because the mitzvah is to count, that means to count with, by definition, to count with precision. Sofek Asiri. And because of that, Reb Shimon says, well, if we accept that principle, that the mitzvah of calibration not sustain any kind of question, any kind of estimate, any kind of ambiguity, then we can understand, we can answer the Balamor's question in a similar fashion. Why is it that Chazal said when it comes to Sfira, we shouldn't count today is day 1, but maybe it's day 2, today is day 3, but maybe it's day 4, right? Why shouldn't we do that? So the very last paragraph of the first column, he says, V'alpid deverbein reshuk tzas, L'taritz kushes ha-rishonim, loma ein onu sofren tomid shtei sfiros. Why we don't double count like we should do on any Yom Tov Sheni? And that is the Baal HaMor asks. So he says, because keivan dimnachshav l'sofek bot lo kol ha-mitzvah. He says, you have to remember, midin dei raisa, we can go with rove. And therefore we know, we're certain that that today is 45, today is 46. But there is a din de rabbanon to have a minog to keep the second day ki'ilu, like they used to keep it bizman, that they didn't know exactly when the counting was. So ubizman shalayhoyu bekin bekviyas diyachi lohoyu mekayim mitzvah svira. This is a very important line, because this was the way that the Rav questioned Avram Shapira. In Avram Shapira, the Kovner Rav was unaware of Reb Shimon. I believe the Kovner Rav may have written this before Reb Shimon wrote this Shara Yosha. And he comes to the same conclusion. Asiri Sofek is not Asiri. Why? Because counting required, by definition, a mitzvah of counting is a mitzvah of precision. All right? And then he says the same thing. He says that, and that explains sphere as well. Avraham Shapir himself, and this is where you see the brisker difference. Avraham Shapir himself, at the very, very end of a long shuv, I think it's Simon Lamed Dalet, the 34th shuv in the Sefer, he writes that he has one doubt, and that is, why didn't the Baal HaMor say this? In other words, that from the fact that the Baal HaMor didn't say this, and he asked the question, would indicate that the Svar may not be 100% accurate, because then the Baal HaMor shouldn't ask the question to begin with. So that, but the Rav's question, apparently the Rav met Rav Shapira, and when Rav Shapira said this to the Rav, so the Rav responded, this is recorded in Rav Shechter's Divrei HaRav, he said, if that's the case, then when there was a real Sveik at the Yoma, in other words, before Hillel established the calendar, we shouldn't have had a mitzvah of Sfiras Omer and Chutzlarts. And the Rav said, but there's no record in Shas that outside of Eretz Yisrael they didn't do the mitzvah Sfiras Omer before Hillel established the calendar. All right? Now, I personally not so clear on that question, because there always was a Rav. Tosha says, and there always was an overwhelming Rav that we did get the Kiddush HaChodesh correctly. But the Reb Shimon was concerned about this question. And Reb Shimon maintains, Ubizman shall you begin with Kviyas, and therefore Reb Shimon says that when they didn't have a Kviyas HaChodesh, when during this period of time in Chutz Laretz, when we were dependent on the messengers coming, and therefore when came the 15th of Nisan, we weren't sure what the 15th or whether it was the 14th, and we kept 2 days.
We didn't count.
So he says they didn't count, right? He says Bizmashli Bikian, the Yachi Lo Hayum Kaim, didn't have the mitzvah Sfira. So Reb Shimon was aware of this kash of the Rav, and he says it must be that they didn't keep it. Omnam Lefiza, but then he asked the question that the Devarva alludes to. But this gives us an important insight into the mitzvah of Sfira Sa'omer per se. Right, mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer is a mitzvah counting. It's a mitzvah counting per se means that you have to know the day with certainty. Otherwise, you're not really counting. Now I want to switch channels for a moment and look at the mitzvah Sfira from another perspective. What I want to point out, if you have a look at the sheets on page number 2. So I was thinking about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Well, there are many ways in which the Torah says can say to count. Right? You can have this week's parsha. We counted Jews, so it says b'mispar shemos, but it doesn't use the word asfarta.
It's interesting to point out that the numbers there are all rounded off to the nearest 100, and they're not precise.
Except for the Bechor.
What? Except for God.
The Levim. Levim. But hold on for 1 second. We'll come to that. Okay. So we could say Umenisem. We could say Upekadatem. There are different ways of Nesias Rosh. There are different ways to count. So why does the Torah choose the word Usvartan Lachem Bimachras Hashav? So we have a principle from the Gra. If you want to understand the nuance of a word, what do? Find the first place it comes up in Chumash. Try to find it. So recently, I was at a shul the other day, and somebody quoted this in the name of Avraham Berliner, who had a parish in Rashi. I heard it, and it comes back to the Vilna Gaon. If you want to understand the nuance of a word, trace it back and find its first place in Chumash and see how it's set. So, I did the work for you. So in source number 3, the first time that the word Sfor, meaning to count, Vayotzei Oso Achutza, Vayomer Habetno Hashemayim Usfor HaKechavim, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to Avram at the Bris Bein Absarim, go out, look up, count the stars, Im Tuchal L'Sfor Osam Vayomer Lo Koy Ezerecha, count them if you can count them. So there, counting means you can't count it. The first time that the word Svartim is used is when you really can count. And now skip to number 5. The third time it appears in Chumash. Vayitzbor Yosef Bor Kechol Hayom Harbei Ma'od Ad Ki Chodal L'Sfor Ki Ein Mispor. The third time is used in Chumash, still in Bereishis. Yosef gathers together all of the wheat of Mitzrayim, and he says, "Ad ki chadal lispor," and he couldn't count anymore. He ain't mispor, right? Ulisvunosai ain't mispor. He can't count. Now you could ask me the following question: that Breishis Lamed Dalu Lamed the second time, even though I think we have it, you have in the Haftorah of yesterday, right? The Haftorah of yesterday, the very first pasuk. Right, Mispar b'nei Yisrael, Asher lo yivay, the number which you can't really count. So the Torah uses the word lisfor when you can't really count it. Now look at the second time it appears in Chumash. V'yom Yaakov l'Shimon Levi, after the battle against Shechem, and Yaakov is upset with Shimon and Levi. Achartem osi lavisheni, you have sullied the waters, you've made it dirty for me. V'yoshev eretz, you've sullied my reputation. I'll never be able, according to the Ramban, I'll never be able to teach anything to these people because I taught them the mitzvah of bris, and you ended murdering them as a result. Vani misay mispor. Rashi learns pshat, vani misay mispor, and I have very few people. So we're very, very exposed. The Ibn Ezra suggests that misay mispor, because it's a very strange phrase, misay mispor, that misay means people. He suggests vani misay mispor, and we are not worth counting. Rashi says that his number, his people will be numbered. Same thing of his people will be numbered. But Ibn Ezra says, Yechi Ruvain Baal Yamos, and his number is not worth counting. He's not going to be counted amongst the Jewish people. He'll always be separate. So the Ibn Ezra supports the idea that the word mispor is used when you can't or aren't really counting. But it's apparent from the first usage that the word usvartem is when your number is really out of reach. You're not really able to count. You can't really count the koyach v'yashamayim. Now, this is a chiddush to say that usvartem is referring to a number that you can't really achieve. It's the polar opposite of what we discuss in the name of Reb Shimon. So whenever one has these questions about how to identify the nuance of a word, there are certain forms that we go to. Yeah, who the more popular forms you go to? When you want to figure the nuance of a certain word in Chumash?
Hirsch.
Hirsch is a strong, often discusses. Who else? Often go to the Malbim, right? So there's another sefer, the Ksava Kabbalah. Ksava was a magnificent sefer. It was written in the, I believe, the 1800s by Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. He was a rav in Konigsberg. Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg was born in Lisa, in Germany. And he was a businessman. He was a tremendous masman as a child. He learned a tremendous amount as a child. But he was also very, very, he didn't go into Rabbonus, didn't go into Melechus HaKodesh initially. He was a very, very successful businessman. And is also a fascinating person because at the age of 46, his business failed. And I'm not sure who it was who had often wanted him to go into Rabbonus because he was such a big Talmud Chacham. But he said, now's the time, you're 46. Instead of putting your business back together, Konigsberg needs a Rav. And he accepted the position, and it was a very large position, and there was a very vibrant reform movement going on in Konigsberg. So not only did he take the position, but he invested himself in the battle against the reform. And one of the battle points between the Orthodox and Reform is Torah Sheba'al Peh. Is Torah Sheba'al Peh Min HaShemayim, right? So one of the jobs that Rabbi Yaakov Tzimetmer took upon himself is to write the Sefer HaKsav, the Torah Sheba'al Chsav, the Kabbalah, and the Torah Baal Peh. And it's a very, very dense Sefer that brings together the ideas of Chazal and the ideas of Torah Sheba'al Peh and shows how they're embedded in the careful reading of the Chumash. And in fact, he was a tremendously humble person. And one of the Gdolim of Eastern Europe I forget who it was, wrote to him that he heard about a sefer, he'd like to receive a copy of the sefer. So the Ksav Kola writes back to him, says, the sefer is not for you. The sefer is for the Hamon Am. He says, I'm very, very gratified because I hear that people are learning my sefer every single Shabbos. It's very gratified. But he says, this is not for you. You should keep on learning the way you're learning. This is for the people who have to be trained to have questions. So now, so he raises the following question. So he went to the Ksav Kabbalah to see if he supports this thesis that Usfartim is used when the numbers are not entirely accurate. In fact, I don't know where I saw this. I saw in one sefer that in yesterday's laning, one of the phrases, which is repeated probably 17 or 18 times, and has to be explained, is Mispara Shemos. Right? Mispara Shemos kol zachor le gulgalosam. What's the Mispara Shemos? You're counting the numbers of names. Person names his child with three or four names. Right? Not so unpopular now. With the Gaboim, you never want your son to get an aliyah, you give him four names. Right? The Gabbai's delight is a nice Yekesh name. My name, Yaakov ben Reb Moshe, the Gabbom love it, right? But you give your child four names, so maybe in a yard sale he'll get an aliyah. So is that Mispar Shemos? The guy has four names, he gets counted four times. He has a Yekesh name, he gets counted once. What's Mispar Shemos? The numbers of names. So some Rishonim say that the number of names means that they wrote their names down. How did Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not like the Ramban has a different approach, but some Rishonim say, how did Moshe Rabbeinu count everybody so quickly? So everybody signed their name in a certain ledger. If Yaakov Kamenetsky says that everybody signed their ledger, every Sar Chamishim had a ledger, and they signed their names with the Sar Chamishim. So the Sar Chamishim, they got the numbers of the first 50, and then you can understand. So within an hour, you have your 50, you make sure that they're 50, and it could be 49, could be 53, whatever, and then you report to the Sari Meya, that can be another hour, Sari Elif, so it makes up to month. With half a day, you get the number of the Jewish people. So one of the Sfarim says Mispara Shemos means because a name it can't really be counted. A name is a story. A name is a sipur, right? Every person's name tells a story. A name of a great grandfather, a great grandmother. Every name has either the aspirations of parents. Every name tells when the child was born. So you don't really have. You can't really count names. Mispara Shemos means that you have a. You're counting something that really, really can't be counted. Sometimes the name is there was a grandmother, and for you know, and to give happiness to grandmother, so you named it after her sister or her uncle or something. Some bias. I once bumped into a mole. I don't know who this was, and I don't remember anymore. And he told me that he wrote a book about the. He'd been a mohel for many, many years. He wrote a book with all the various stories that happened while he was a mohel. So I asked him, what is the best story? I'd say, buying the book. What is the best story? So he said, I'll tell you the best story. He said, I once did a bris for a family. He said, I forget what he said, but they had 9 kids, 13 kids, I'm not sure. And I did the bris, and we named the boy Yeshaya. And after the bris, so the mother says to the father, we have a Yeshaya ready. So every name has a story. That's why it's Mispara Shemos, right? So I wanted to find out. The truth is that I once told this to a relative of Rabbi Scheinberg's at Zal, and I said the same thing happened to Rabbi Scheinberg. Rabbi Scheinberg had a daughter, one of his, I don't know which daughter, I'm making this up. It's called Esther Rezel. So when he came home and it was Lev Rebetzin, he named her Esther Rezel. She said, "But we have an Esther Chana." So he said, "No, Esther Rezel is not an Esther Chana." He covered for himself very quickly. So I went to the Ksav Kabbalah and I said to figure out whether my hunch has any validity to it. So look at what he says. He raises the question of why it says Usfartem Lochem. Why do we say that you count for yourself? Isn't that redundant? That's the mitzvah of counting. So milas lachem einu letei sefes she'ein bo tzorech. He says the word lachem is not redundant. It's not unnecessary. Kamo she'ir betchilas hamachshava she'ein el tikun aloshen bulvad. And it's not just to make the pasuk flow better. Elohu be'emes ikra mechuvan. It is a principal idea in counting. Ubola Rosa comes to teach us shalom, yes, viras, shivas, ashvuas, eila, lebchinas, kamus, misborum, vasmusan. That the counting of these 7 weeks is not the counting simply of numbers, of the numbers of days, as people think. We're really counting is the quality of these days. That these days are days when a person can improve himself and can build himself and make him a better keli for Kabbalah Satara. Kimo, as it says, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. What's the Lecha for? The Lecha is La'anosch L'toivotzcha. So Svartim Lachem means you're counting for yourself. You're counting for these days to become days of greater improvement. You're not really counting the day. You're not really saying today is day one, today is day two. That wouldn't be Usvartem. You're counting something that cannot be fully counted. You're counting that today's an opportunity to think about how I'm going to be more open to the Kabbalah, the Torah of Matan Torah. There is the very last line of this piece. He goes on to explain what's the kash that many of you have. The kasha that many of you have is, what about the woman who counts Shem and Akiyam? She's just counting the days, right? The Sofer law. So the Rabbi Yaakov Mekum says, no, that's not correct. She's not just counting the days as they come by, she's counting the quality that those days have to be days that are free of any flaw. That's what he points out later on, that's why it says, V'sofra lo shiva yomim. She'ena mechuvan, which says, Mitzorah tesvav in a bracket. She'ena mechuvan. Bohem sfiras hakamos levad. It's not, she's not simply counting today's day one, day two. Gam sfiras eichos. She yeshivas yomim nikiyim mizov. That there should be 7 days free of any flow. When a woman does bedikas every day, the chasam surfaces. The way to look at it is that really meikir adin. He says, like a moshel, a woman should, in order to be sure she's not bleeding, she should meditate for 7 days. And make sure she's not bleeding, because Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't design the halacha though. Kadosh Baruch Hu designed the halacha that as long as a person checks themselves and aware, so by doing a bedik in the morning, a bedik in the afternoon, they become aware. But that when she's counting the sofra lo, does not simply mean to say, go to your calendar and check it off. It doesn't mean to say, yom yom rishon. There's one sheet like that. But the ikar mitzvah of the sofra lo is to make sure that these are days, what kind of days for your flow, days for your bleeding. So you see the Torah used the word v'sofra when we are trying to count something that cannot be fully calibrated. When we're trying to count something that has a quality to it and not simply assigned a number to it, like Mispar Hashemos. The very, very last line of this Ksava Kabbalah. And it's a very interesting that Rabbi Yaakov Simekum resources I find very interesting. You can see this in the Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Usvartem lochem, lochem daikel lochem la'atzmachem. It's for yourselves. The loma begin liistakom ulekabola deiraisa. Why are you counting? Begin liistakom in order for a person to be. To rejuvenate, become Torah, ulekabolant imekabol the Torah. When I was recent years, I often come across in Sifrei Musar that Shavuos is a person has a chance to be mekabol the Torah once again, and I always found this to be difficult because on Shavuos we do celebrate the giving of the Torah, but Shavuos is no mitzvah chayiv odim leros asma keilu hu amad bar Sinai. So I also found it to be strange, and the Sifrei Musar are replete with this idea that we can have another personal Kabbalah of Torah on Shavuos, that the days of the Sfira, days in which we prepare ourselves for this new Kabbalah of Torah, is also where it came from. It's not in Chumash. I don't know, I don't remember any Gemara like this, any Ram like this. It comes from Kabbalah, apparently. That's what he's saying. Apparently it comes from the Torah Sasod, the Rav Shimon Bar Yochai understood that the mitzvah, that one of the events of Shavuos is like Kabbalah Raisa, that a person has the ability to have another Kabbalah Satorah. The Rav used to speak about time having quality to it, time having identity. that Yadus, one of the chidushim of Yadus, is that time is not only the passage of minutes and of hours, but time has its own substance to it. In the Sifrei Sod, in the Sifrei Kabbalah, they take this idea even further. They take this idea that any time that a certain event happened on a certain day, so that day is a predisposition for that event being relived to some measure. The Nisan is the Chodesh HaGeula, right? Meaning that since Geula happened in Nisan, it's predisposed for another Geula. We are familiar with this idea in the dark side of history. We're very comfortable with the idea that Tisha B'Av has been predisposed ever since the Chayin HaMeraglim to be a terrible day for the Jewish people. And happened during the first Beis Hamikdash, second Beis Hamikdash, happened during the Inquisition. So we're familiar with the idea of time having substance and time being predisposed. So the Torah Sod says that that's true on the upside of Jewish events also. That any time that an event, like an Eis Ratzon, there is, Yom Kippur is an Eis Ratzon because the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us Mechila for the Chet Egel. So once an event happened in Jewish history, and then it has a then that time is blessed with that predisposition. The Torah Sod says, so Shavuos was Kabbalah Satorah. So it's predisposed that Klal Yisrael can have another Kabbalah Satorah every single Shavuos. But we have to prepare ourselves. So just like the 49 days that were counted from Pesach to Shavuos is a marvelous medrash that does not appear in the collection of Midrashim. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has it in a Sefer, in the Emes LeYaakov, but it's quoted from Rishonim. And the Medrash says, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, this is a beautiful raison d'etre, a beautiful reason to understand the mitzvah of Svira. He says, there's a Medrash that after the Kriyas Yamsuf, Klal Yisrael turned to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said, no, we're supposed to be in Har Sinai. Right? We are an impatient people. At Kriyas Yamsuf, let's get ready. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, we're not ready yet. We still have to wait another 49 days till we're ready. So Ischilu, they began to count. Every single day, they'd go to sleep at night. Okay, one day is behind us. 2 days are behind us. 3 days are behind us. So Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Chaya, make a shvua. That just like you counted these days, I'm going to give you a mitzvah to count these days. Hezra Dover is that one of the beautiful reasons of Sfiras HaOmer is that since Klal Yisrael expressed a cheshek, an excitement, a desire for Kabbalah Satorah by counting, so forever Klal Yisrael can reconnect with that cheshek, with that excitement during these days. And that's why these days have been set aside for days of preparation. That's what the Kabbalah says, that Daikil Lachem, Musfartel Lachem, you're not just counting the passage of a day, count for yourselves. See how today can be a day where I can make myself a better keli to be Mekabel Torah. That's why I think it was the Alter Mikelem, who introduced the idea that the 48 forms of Kinyan HaTorah should be reviewed during the 49 days of Sfira. So he's off one day, Chazara. So the last day is Chazara for the other 48. But the idea that every day could be a day of preparation, I saw a beautiful idea by the Yabbats. The very first Manda Omar of Kinyan HaTorah is Reb Meir. Right? Yesterday's prayer began with Omar Reb Meir. So the Yabbat says, why Reb Meir? It's because Reb Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Reb Meir was one of the Talmudim, not only he was the chief Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Everything we have from Rabbi Akiva, Stam Mishnah Reb Meir. So much Rabbi Akiva's Torah comes to Reb Meir. So Reb Meir saw Rabbi Akiva. Reb Meir saw a person to whom Rachel said to Rabbi Akiva, that we'll get married on tonight that you'll learn. Right? They got married, 12 years in the Beis Hamikdash, another 12 years. So what did Rachel see in Rabbi Akiva? Rachel saw in Rabbi Akiva that he was a Keli who could be Mekabel Torah. She saw that he had all Kinyanei HaTorah, that he was a humble person, that he was a loving person, that he was a Nosis Ochavera. All of the Midos Tovos that Talmud Chacham needs, Rachel saw Rabbi Akiva, all he's missing. He hasn't had time to learn. So she saw Caleb, so Omer Rabbi Meir, that's what Rabbi Meir says, he's the first man to Omer, that he saw in Rabbi Akiva that if you're the right Caleb, if we work on ourselves during this period of time, so then we will be successful, that when Shavuos comes, we'll be ready to have another form of Kabbalah Satorah. So what have we seen? We've seen that there are two approaches that seem to collide, that the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, and there are many reasons for the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer, many of them relate to the Korbanos HaOmer. But this morning we looked at the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer as it relates to Pesach and Kabbalah Satorah. So first we saw from Lomdus, we saw from the Torah of Shimon, and the Torah of the year of Avram Shapira. We saw this idea, which may or may not be accepted by the Rishonim. That's a question. But there is an idea that whenever the Torah says you have to count, so that is requires precision. The mitzvah of counting per se is a mitzvah that's defined as like a, there are certain fields, certain professions. A person's an accountant. So if he has ambiguity, I would think, not such a good accountant, right? If he says, maybe you owe $3,000, right? Maybe you owe $10,000, maybe you owe $10,200. Not such a good accountant, right? So when it comes to, there's certain areas that require a certain precision. There are other areas that can sustain a certain lack of precision. The engineer probably cannot sustain any significant imprecision. But there are certain areas, certainly a philosopher, certainly a humanities person, a person is involved in literature and in history, they're always speculating, right? So there are areas of human endeavor that can sustain question ambiguity, and there are areas that cannot sustain any ambiguity. When the Torah says, the mitzvah Talmud Torah, celebrating Pesach, the mitzvah Haggadah, it can sustain a lot of speculation and the question. But when the Torah says you got to count, that requires precision, and therefore counting with an ambiguity is not counting out. Botal aminyan, not the right mitzvah. On the other hand, we went through the approach of Parshanut by looking at the Pasuk, Ksav Kabbalah, and he suggests that Usvartem means you're really counting something that cannot be fully caught by a number. That's Umindisem, that's Uvakadatem, right? But Usvartem always shows that you're looking at something that really can't be counted. How we count these days, so even if we will say today is the 45th day, the 46th, 47th day, and that's the sum total of our Sefiras HaOmer, so the Ksav Kabbalah said we missed the point. If a person stops for a moment when he says Sefiras HaOmer, he thinks, no, did I think about Matan Torah today? Did I try to become a better Keli for Matan Torah? Then he was Makayim, the mitzvah Sefira, in the best possible fashion. So at first glance, they seem to give us two different approaches. One is that the mitzvah Sefiras HaOmer is a scientifically calibrated mitzvah. That's a mitzvah. On the other hand, we had the approach of Ksav Kabbalah, and the mitzvah of Sefiras HaOmer is an undefined and a mitzvah that's hard to put into words. So I would suggest that this is not necessarily that these are two opposing views. But when it comes to the mitzvah of Kabbalah, of Talmud Torah, then the two are really are tied together very, very well. Because the process of learning Torah requires discipline. But what one will discover in the study of Torah is entirely undisciplined and depends on the person and the kohos you bring and how you penetrate a certain idea. One of the remarkable aspects of studying by the Rav was the Rav was an extremely disciplined learner. Right? Ad kedei kach that I heard shir from the Rav for four and a half years, and there's only one time during those shirim that discussed philosophy. He was a man who was accomplished in philosophy, but when he was learning Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, Halacha, he was very, very disciplined. And he was disciplined in terms of exactly how he would learn a Gemara, how he was medayik in the language of the Rishonim, and anything he presented had to be rooted in the words of the Rav. I can remember very, very few times when the Rav would say, let's make the following chakira. If it happened once a year, I'm not even sure. It was always apologetic, because that wasn't the approach to speculate. The approach was, what does the text say? What idea comes from the Tosfos? What can we build from the Tosfos? It's a tremendous discipline. But we know that where the Rav ended up, the ideas that he presented to us, so they were tremendously creative ideas. They were ideas that were magnificent ideas. So the two, it's not a stira. In terms of the process of the study of Torah, it requires discipline. It requires preparation. It requires that a person becomes a better person and work on themselves. It requires keeping a certain schedule. It requires being koveya itim laTorah, setting time aside for learning. So that all requires discipline. What the impact of the study of Torah will be he won't be a rigid, disciplined person. Isn't that a fascinating idea? To engage in the endeavor requires discipline. Does that mean that you become every Talmud Chacham is this very, very stiff, yeksha individual? Only Amiyak, I can say these things. Who has blinders on and only sees a very, no. The result of a Talmud Chacham, we see different kinds of Talmud Chacham, different kinds of learners, different kinds of host of the Svarim. You can have in the same mitzvah, Ksava Kabbalah, who sees in the mitzvah a counting of Eichos, and the Reb Shimon, who sees in the same mitzvah the requirement of precision. As long as we begin studying it with a certain discipline, then where our study, where the Torah will take us, will be a depth of understanding and a depth of appreciation that elevates and makes us only Hashem in the most magnificent fashion.